You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Joe Crawford. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, June 7th, 2016.
Because I'm an artist and I'm self-employed, I always have this kind of like angst going on with me about getting stuff done.
Local man who turned his passion into a business, coming up later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the ins and outs of money, our weekly segment providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. But first, these local headlines.
Monroe County officials took feedback last night on a proposed Phase 2 of the Fullerton Pike project. Phase 2 involves road reconstruction beginning slightly west of the intersection of Gordon Pike and Rogers Street. The project extends to an area east of the Clear Creek Bridge. Improvements on Gordon Pike include two on-street bike lanes and a 10-foot-wide multi-use path on the north side of the road. Original plans for the Rogers Street intersection called for a traffic signal, but project manager Patrick Wooten of the engineering firm American Structure Point said that because of public input, a roundabout is now planned. The change will affect planned bike lanes.
On-street bike lanes, for safety purposes, will be eliminated as we go through the roundabout. So there are two options that are available for the on-street bike lanes. The option is there to merge in with the through travel lane, and there'll be a shared bike vehicle travel lane going through the roundabout. The other option is a transition to the off-street, behind the curb, multi-use pass going through there. So if you don't feel safe going through the roundabout intersection, the option will be there to go up the ramp and be off the street on the multi-use pass to go through the intersection.
Wooten said the plan also proposes replacing the bridge over Clear Creek at Gordon Pike with a longer bridge to help prevent potential flooding in the future.
What the hydraulic analysis finds is that today there's a bunch of water in the design year that flows over the roadway. So in the proposed condition, what we are looking at is to make sure that all of the drainage flows underneath the bridge, not over the road.
Wooten also said maintaining three lanes over the bridge will provide a median for the safety of pedestrians at the nearby Bloomington Rail Trail crossing. The meeting and the presentation can be viewed online at catstv.net. County officials will take questions and comments on the project until June 22nd for discussion at the next meeting.
In its meeting last night, the Bloomington Redevelopment Commission gave a green light to the fourth phase of a five-phase plan to construct the Cascades Park Trail. Park Operations Director Dave Williams said previous phases of the project created trails running northeast from Clubhouse Drive in Lower Cascades Park to Stone Mill Road and northwest from Clubhouse to Kinzer Pike. Williams said phase four will pick up the trail at Kinzer Pike.
The phase that we're requesting, phase four, would start where we left off at Kinzer and Clubhouse Drive, go west towards Bloomington North High School and north towards the entrance to the Rosewood subdivision, with a paved trail entirely on City Park's golf course property and street right-of-way. There will be no land acquisition required for this project.
The preliminary design of this phase was completed nearly 3 years ago, but Williams said the project was shelved for lack of funding. Williams requested using funds from the North Kinzer Prow Road TIF for the Phase 4 construction. City Controller Jeff Underwood said prior phases were paid for with TIF funds.
This is not in the TIF, but it serves the TIF and the
that determination was made when prior phases were introduced and made forward to funds.
The construction of the paved side path will mean realigning tees, greens, and cart paths at the Cascades Golf Course. The construction is planned for the off-season to avoid any loss of income at the course and to allow time for grass and landscaping to regrow. Phase 3 of the trail links Stone Mill Road to Griffey Lake and is part of a state-funded realignment of the intersection of Old State Road 37 and North Dunn Street. A planned fifth phase will run south, connecting Lower Cascades Park to the trail system at Miller Showers Park. Williams said the portion of the Cascades Park trail that has already been completed has been a hit with the residents.
I can tell you that the trail system that has been built has been very well received. We now have a safe route for pedestrians and bicyclists coming from the steep hill down to Lower Cascades Park and to Griffey Lake.
Phase 4 of the trail is expected to be completed by 2018.
The Bloomington Community Farmers Market has received a donation from an anonymous donor of $30,000 to continue the Double Market Bucks program. According to a press release from the Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department, the donation comes from the same anonymous donor that contributed to support the program at its beginning. The Market Bucks program allows for community members to use their SNAP benefits to purchase locally grown food. The Farmers Market implemented the Double Market Bucks program in 2013, allowing for community members to double their vouchers when using SNAP benefits to purchase them. Farmers Market Coordinator Marsha Veldman says that the market has seen a growth in consumers since the development of the program.
About a third of the SNAP recipients who come to market would not shop at the market if it weren't for accepting Market Bucks here. And almost across the board, they say their families eat healthier because of it, eat more fruits and vegetables. So it really helped many families in this community be able to access not only the really healthy product at the market, but also join into this community event.
The 2015 Double Market Bucks annual report shows that 355 households made 1,200 transactions last year. A press release states the $30,000 donation will keep the program running through the 2017 market season. Customers who want to use their SNAP benefits at the market can purchase vouchers at the market information table on Tuesdays and inside City Hall on Saturdays.
Governor Mike Pence has asked the federal government for more money to fund Indiana's pre-kindergarten program, which serves low-income families who can't afford preschool. The governor wrote a letter to the Department of Health and Human Services requesting more money to, quote, open doors of opportunity to the most vulnerable children in our state, unquote. The decision is a dramatic reversal from Pence's position 2 years ago when he refused federal funding for Indiana's then new pre-K program on the grounds that the money would come with terms and conditions from the federal government. Pence argued that the program wasn't ready for a rapid expansion with federal money. He expressed concern about restrictions associated with using federal funds, but he gave few details. We spoke with Michael Kahn Powers of the Indiana University Early Childhood Center, who conducts research on early childhood education. He says that even though Indiana is relatively late to the party in providing funding for pre-K, the new program might be an opportunity to learn from other states.
It's a great opportunity for Indiana to have an infusion of additional resources. Obviously, in the On My Way pre-K, we read stories about waiting lists for children and families that aren't able to get the vouchers and receive preschool. So that's welcome. Indiana is one of the last states in the union to publicly fund pre-K services. So, unfortunately, people could say, oh, that's a shame. You know, why is it taking us so long? But the other piece is, well, we have the opportunity to learn from others who have gone before us. And so I hope that we take the time to design a system of early education that builds on the work of very exemplary programs like the Boston Public Schools, or the Tulsa, Oklahoma schools, or the Chicago Parent-Child Centers. We have wonderful models and leaders, and it would be a shame if we didn't spend some time learning from them to create a system of high-quality early education.
There is a wealth of scientific evidence touting the benefits of access to pre-K education. A longitudinal study conducted by the Chicago Public School System concluded that every dollar spent on pre-K programs returned $7 in societal benefit. Studies conducted on other school systems have found similar results, particularly for at-risk and disadvantaged children.
There is very sound research that shows when we provide high-quality early education experiences, and I do need to emphasize the term high-quality, because we have a lot of childcare and early education experiences out there that provide a very decent, sound, quality care and experience for children. But when we talk about the need for early education, particularly for children that are at risk for not doing well when they enter kindergarten, research shows that when we provide a very high quality early education experience, we can go to great lengths to address any delays in their learning and development, any possible risks that might hamper their ability to learn and be successful in kindergarten, and also provide an impact that will last a lifetime.
The $80 million grant that Pence is seeking from the federal government is equivalent to 8 years of the current funding for Indiana's On My Way pre-K pilot program. That program is currently active in 5 Indiana counties and pays for pre-K access via a lottery system. At current funding levels, less than half of the applicants get into the program. House Speaker Brian Bosma has said that expanding the On My Way program will be a priority for the next legislative session. The Early Childhood Center at Indiana University has conducted research evaluating the On My Way program, as well as grant matching programs in counties not included in On My Way. While Indiana's pre-K programs succeed in some areas, they come up short in others.
We can see, I know for Indiana, in our state and in the evaluations we've done, programs do very well in providing a very positive social climate and environment in which young children can learn. It's safe, it's nurturing, it's friendly, it's responsive, and those are key ingredients for successful. But when we look at the quality of instruction and how well teachers are providing rich language environments and building needed vocabulary and fostering more critical thinking skills, we don't do very well on average. And so when we look at the quality of curriculum that programs are using in the state, we find very, very few programs that use what we would call evidence-based curricula. That is, curriculum that were developed and has been researched and demonstrated to be highly effective in teaching the skills that they target, whether it's literacy skills or social skills or math skills or what have you. The quality of our programs is mixed. There are a lot of good folks that work very hard to improve their practices and work towards national accreditation. But when we start to look at those elements that support high quality education, it's a more of a mixed bag. And to be fair, and that's not true for Indiana programs, that's true for most states.
John Gregg, Pence's 2016 challenger, supported the move, but criticized Pence for first refusing the money 2 years ago. Superintendent Glenda Ritz also released a statement expressing a similar sentiment. Several conservative and homeschooling groups released statements opposing the decision and accusing Pence of giving the federal government more control over education in Indiana.
The Indiana State Department of Health says syphilis cases have increased by 70% since 2014. The state reported just over 500 cases last year, up from 297 in 2014. That mirrors the national trend of increasing STI rates. The national rate is at its highest since the mid-1990s, and the risk of contracting syphilis is greatest among men in their 20s. The state health department released a similar advisory back in October when preliminary data showed that a large increase in the syphilis rate was likely. The CDC recommends testing for pregnant women, men who have sex with men, and anyone who is HIV positive. Syphilis is treatable with a course of penicillin or other antibiotics.
A new study from the life science business development group BioCrossroads points to a rising need to retain engineer and information technology graduates in Indiana. Studies show that many students leave the state after receiving degrees here. In a recent article, the Indiana Business Journal stated that Indiana retains only 33% of in-state college biology graduates, 38% of engineering grads, 49% of computer and information science graduates, and 60% of those with degrees related to healthcare. While graduates are leaving, Indiana job opportunities are booming. The report recommends addressing the challenge by building a strong foundation of science, technology, engineering, and math skills from K through 12 in Indiana schools. It also suggests fostering health and life sciences talent after high school and upgrading the skills of the existing health and life science workforce. A PricewaterhouseCoopers study found that 51% of life science executives report that hiring is growing more difficult, with just 28% expressing confidence that they will have access to top talent. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Joe Crawford. Daniel Evans is the founder and current artistic director of the Bloomington Clay Studio. Daniel's dedication to clay has taken him all over the United States and landed him here in Bloomington. Anna Werner brings us his story for today's WFHB Community Report. This story was produced in partnership with an audio journalism class at Indiana University. A quick note for listeners, this story was reported as the studio was moving to a new location. The studio is now located on South Smith Road.
And so I'm going to get it right, you know, where it doesn't feel like it's uncentered. I'm going to just get this top. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to throw something just right off of the very tip top of this chunk of clay. This is probably about 3 or 4 pounds of clay.
This is Daniel Evans, and this...
my hands just to kind of like hollow it out a little
bit. Is his
bit.
Passion.
And then I use my fingers in different, like, pressure.
Daniel was in college when his love for pottery began.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a dumb little pinch pot. You know, like in ceramics one, like you would take, you know, at the university here at IU, and just was fascinated by it and knew pretty quickly that's what I wanted to do.
Today, Daniel is the founder and current artistic director of the Bloomington Clay Studio. He's in the process of moving the studio to its new location.
I found this like ideal because there was not a clay studio here. You know, so I'm like, I'm not trying to be like too business headed, but I was like, well, you know, I'm here and I don't have any place to work. I should just build a place that I would like to work, or, you know, that I would like, if, you know, if you came, you know, to a certain place with a significant other and you were kind of on their coattails, you know, and you're like, well, what am I doing here? Well, there was nothing, there was no like affordable studio spaces for me to work. So it was like, screw it, I'll just open up a studio.
If you hear some rustling in the background, those are Daniel's dogs. That's Shiloh and Coco Chanel, who will be able to be around Daniel much more, considering the new studios in his home. Daniel's first studio was in downtown Bloomington, where business was going really well. Though this location made it possible to have a wider cross-section of students, Daniel did the unexpected. He decided to scale back and make his studio exactly the way he wanted.
But I'm pretty excited about, yeah, you know, what we're doing out here.
Though there are many luxuries and freedoms that come with owning your own business.
I mean, you see where I live.
Daniel lives in a woodsy Bloomington neighborhood. With open walls and an extremely comforting vibe, it's the perfect location for a creative studio.
I mean, this is great, and I think it's because this is what I do.
However, it isn't always easy. I asked Daniel what the hardest part about his job was.
You know, it's funny that you said that because I've been thinking about that a lot. But it's because I don't have a clock that I punch. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have very clear parameters on, like, what I'm supposed to be doing during the day. But I know I'm getting paid for it. So, you know, me going out and spending time building a kiln sometimes can be really difficult because I get so much joy out of it. Is like, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? And so it's always like, should I be doing something more constructive, or, you know, kind of battling with it? Right, so this gets all my air pockets out really good. It's just making sure that I know that I'm doing the right thing on a day-to-day basis. That's the hardest part of my job.
The studio is taking a little longer than Daniel anticipated, but he's taking each day in strides.
The last couple of years have been so like pressure oriented and like, you know, craziness, because I also had a hand in at the Fell Building, which is a an artist space down there, and that was a lot of pressure. So getting out here, you know, I was like, heck with the pressure. I just did not want to have to deal with any of that. So when we came out here, it was like, yeah, let's just take this nice and slow. So
with the move came many changes. His original space was larger, meaning that clients would be lost in the process. However, Daniel sees this as a gain. With less people and more time, Daniel will happily be able to give his clients the attention he believes they deserve.
Right, you know, where it doesn't feel like it's uncentered, I'm going to just get this top. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to throw something just right off the very tip top of this chunk of clay. This is probably about 3 inches. I always have because I'm an artist and I'm self-employed, I always have this kind of like angst going on with me about getting stuff done, but nothing like, God, I hope everything works out just perfect. Make a little bottle, maybe something closed.
Daniel plans on taking each day as it comes and enjoying the ride.
I don't have a boss. I'm my boss. It's a horrible thing. But
from Bloomington, I'm Anna Werner.
That story was produced in partnership with an audio journalism class at Indiana University, taught by former professor Sarah Neal Estes.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly financial segment, The Ins and Outs of Money.
It's The Ins and Outs of Money, presented by the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Quick tips for getting control of your money, no matter how big or small your income or family is.
Hi, and welcome again to The Ins and Outs of Money. I'm Ryan Stacey with the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. If you've been paying attention at all these past few weeks, you might have noticed a change in what's going on outside. And you might have found yourself saying things like, it's hot in here, I'm gonna switch on the air conditioning. Well, as tempting as it is to run the AC when it's hot outside, you might not realize how much you pay for that chilly air. In fact, your air conditioner can be one of the most expensive appliances you run at home. And of course, in addition to the cost to your monthly budget, there's also the environmental cost of using lots of energy to stay cool. If you're smart though, you can take steps to reduce the need to run the AC, and if you do turn it on, to run it efficiently, and only as much as is absolutely necessary. Let's think about how we can accomplish that in a very basic way, and that is keeping the heat out of your house in the first place. And where does most of that heat come from? The sun, of course. So keeping that hot sunlight out can make a big difference. During the day, covering east and south facing windows with drapes, blinds, or shades will block that direct heat from ever coming into your house. And if you're able to, you might also consider putting awnings over windows to automatically block the sun. Other culprits in creating heat inside your house are your lighting and your appliances. If you haven't already, think about replacing all the light bulbs in your home with cool fluorescent bulbs. You'd be surprised how much light from a regular light bulb also heats the room. And what about those large appliances in our homes? Think of the heat our ovens, dishwashers, and dryers generate, and now imagine what you can do to reduce it. Opting for stovetop or microwave cooking when it's hot out, running your dishwasher with cooler water and air dry, and air drying your laundry will keep you feeling cooler and use less energy, a win-win for your wallet and the earth. Instead of switching on the AC, a concept worth mastering is keeping cool air moving into your house and warm air moving out. If you have what are called combination windows where the top and bottom panes both move up and down, a good trick is to open them both partially. The opening at the top part of the window will allow warm air to escape from your house, which will cause cooler air to be sucked into the house at the opening at the bottom of the window. You can also try letting fans, large and small, cool the room you're in. Ceiling fans don't just make the air move, which feels cool on our skin. They move warm air away from the floor and up toward the ceiling. And cheap electric box fans are good for keeping the air moving, and they feel especially good when you place bowls of cool water in front of them. Of course, their box shape also helps them sit really nicely in a windowsill where they can bring that outside air right in, nice and cool. Well, sometimes you just can't avoid it. It's just too unbearable. You have to switch the air on. If you do have to use AC, there are still ways to keep the energy used to a minimum though. First, you can try to cool only where you'll actually be in the house. Using a smaller window air conditioner unit before firing up the central air is a good idea. By closing vents in basements, which tend to be the coolest parts of the house anyway, you're making sure all the cool air is going where it's most needed, in the warmer upper floors. And if where you'll be is not in the house for more than a few hours, raising the temperature on your thermostat to above 80 degrees can save quite a bit of energy. Same goes when you're sleeping. Raising the temperature on your AC or just turning it off and raising a window could be all you'll need at night when temperatures cool off and your body tries to conserve heat. Remember too to keep your air conditioning system free from dust and anything that might block delivery of that expensive cool air. AC filters that are changed regularly, vents that are vacuum cleaned, and ducts that are properly sealed and cleared out are more efficient, which of course means they are cheaper. And finally, it doesn't hurt to get out of the mindset that cooler equals better. If you've ever felt so cold in air conditioning that you've reached for a sweater instead of just raising the temperature of the room, you're thinking with this mindset. These days we spend so much time in air conditioning that we're almost afraid to feel anything warmer than an icicle, so consider actually training yourself to get used to warmer temperatures. Eating a relaxing outside when you can, getting some exercise outdoors, or just turning the AC off at certain times of the day can make you more accustomed to natural air, make you appreciate having the air on when you really need it, and save you money. So, have you thought of anything you might do to decrease your dependence on your air conditioning? I hope today's tips gave you some ideas. Just remember the rule of thumb with AC. The lower the temperature, the higher your energy bill. So stay cool, not broke.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacey at Level Up, the Digital Creativity Center at the library. Executive producer is Joe Crawford, and Christina Wilty is our associate producer and sound editor. Music courtesy of Flannelgraph Records. Tools for taking control of your money can be found at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library.info.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Casey Ross, Kathy Norton, and Jared Dill, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Anna Werner.
The Ins and Outs of Money is produced by Ryan Stacey and associate producer Christina Wiltsy. It's part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Our engineer is Jennifer Brooks. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Joe Crawford. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
And you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.